Hi everyone, it's Mary Strawn here, host of the Kids Who Color Outside the Lines interview series, where we're talking about kids who think differently and learn differently. And today I am really excited to share with you my interview with Julia Cook, who I think has probably the coolest job in the world. It combines two of my favorite things, which are books and children. And she's, we're going to do a little something different because we're going to talk about her books that she's written for kids to help build their problem-solving skills around different issues that come up with our kids, especially kids who think differently. So welcome, Julia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm really looking forward to this. And Julia, tell people exactly what you do and a little bit more about yourself.
Well, I was a former middle school math teacher turned elementary school counselor. And about 10 years ago, the kids in my building were having a big issue with tattling. They were tattling so much, the teachers wanted to pull their hair out. And they said, do a lesson on tattling. Now, you know, we have, in the classroom, we have so much to teach kids and not a lot of time to do it in. So if you can find a really cool book to read to a child, you can get in their head, connect what you want them to learn with something that's already in there, and, you know, your life's easier and their life's a whole lot more fun. So I looked for a book on tattling, per se, and I couldn't find one that said what I wanted it to say. So I wrote a story about a little kid who tattled, and the story started working, and kids were doing pretty well at the problem-solving issue, and teachers had more time to do their stuff. And this teacher came in my office and said, you should try to do something with this. So I grabbed a book off the shelf just on a whim, and I picked up the phone and called the publisher in the front and told them, I have a book on tattling. It seems to be working, and I'm a school counselor. And they said, send it in. We're looking for one. So I overnighted it to them on a Monday, and they called me back on a Wednesday, and they said, we want to publish your book. Do you have any more? I said, how much do I have to pay you? They said, oh, we're going to pay you. And I dropped the phone. And that was 10 years ago. So now there are 76 total titles, if you count the activity books. I've done over 1,200 school visits, several keynoting events for teachers and educators and counselors abroad and in the States. And there's over 1.5 million books out there sold. But it's just a great way to the parents, you know, we know what we want to say to kids, but how do we get them to buy into what we're saying? So if you read to your child, you can open their mind, and then you can tell a story, and then you can relate to the story. Like if a child is interrupting, you know, and you tell them, you're interrupting. But if you read them, right, my mouth is a volcano, they get a concrete visual of what that is, and they say, oh, your mouth's being a volcano again, and they get it. And then they feel successful because they're solving their own problems. And if the books are all research-based, so if you do what the parent does in the book, according to research, you're doing and saying all the right things. And according to research, if you're a teacher and you do what the teacher in the book does. So I can model, you know, from what the experts say, those positive strategies and put them into a storybook. So it's kind of effective. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, no kidding. And I think the fun piece, like even just when you're saying like, oh, your mouth is being a volcano, like it's just like so much easier to hear than like the, you know, what we typically could say to a child at that point. So I just like think that the kids got to buy in a little bit.
I'm not about letting kids get away with stuff they shouldn't, but you have to buy into their strengths, and you have to create, every child that comes in your path has what's in it for me tattooed to their forehead. And if you can convince them that, you know, what you're saying is to benefit them, they're all over listening to it, you know. So, but if you're yelling at them or just telling them what you want them to do and they can't connect with it, then you kind of are fighting a battle.
Right, and sometimes it's a losing battle. That's a challenge, right?
And sometimes it's a really cool tool. Like if your spouse is not handling something the way they should, and they read the book to the kid, and in the book the parent does what you want your spouse to do, you know, then vicariously through reading the book, the parent learns, oh, maybe I, like I have one called My Mom Thinks She's My Volleyball Coach, but she's not. And it's written by the neurotic parent who tries to coach their child. And I was that parent, so who better to write that book than me, you know? So, yeah, that's kind of where they're coming from.
Yeah, that's so cool. So where do you, like you said, where do you get the ideas for the book?
Ideas come from kids. They come from teachers. Both of my publishers, I'm fortunate to have two nonprofit education-related publishers. So the proceeds of the book go back to fund Boys Town, which is one of my publishers, and then National Center for Youth Issues. And so those two sects are in the field all the time talking to teachers and counselors and parents. And, you know, so then my publishers will shoot me certain, you know, ideas. Mm. And then the public will email me and say, hey, I've got this problem. Do you think you could write a book on that? And, you know, and so then, and then there's a lot of nonprofits out there that I've written books so that the proceeds can fund them. Cancer, there's one on cancer, one on horse therapy. Currently kind of working with JDRF on, you know, juvenile diabetes. Maybe we'll tap into that and see what we can do to help them. So it's just a lot of information. And if you can make it in a fun, easy to obtain way, everybody wins.
It's cool. All right, let's get to the books. You mentioned My Mouth is a Volcano. So for each one of those, each one of their books, why don't you kind of share the challenge or the, you know, the thing that we're trying to address, and then a little bit about the story
this was one of my very first ones, and it is probably the best known. I actually got an email the other day that someone had written an article on the books that politicians, children's books that politicians should read, and it made the list.
Really?
My mouth is fucking, it's like interrupting. So, you know, words pop into my head and slide onto my tongue, then my tummy starts to rumble, and then it starts to grumble, words begin to wiggle, and then they do the jiggle. Then my tongue pushes all my words into my teeth and I erupt. Words just explode out of my mouth. My mouth is a volcano. And you'll always get a kid who says, that's how I feel, you know.
Yeah.
So you kind of connect with them. And then, so the kid has a problem. And then the solution is presented in the book. And then if the kid does what the solution says, they become their own problem solvers. You know, as parents, we want to wave our magic wand and solve our kids' problems for them. But a really good parent's job is to teach your child to solve their own problems. So basically, if your kid does what the kid in the book does, they're solving their own problems. So the kid learns to bite down hard, breathe his words out through his nose, and then wait a while and then breathe them back into his mouth. But the key to the book is empathy, because he doesn't get it until somebody interrupts him or erupts him, you know, because that really makes him mad. And he's like, well, now you know how we feel when you interrupt us, you know.
Mm.
So that empathy factor, oh, I get it now, you know.
Mm.
Like there's one on stealing called Ricky Sticky Fingers, and his mom hides his bike and tells him it got stolen so that he realizes how horrible he felt when he made those other people feel bad when he took their stuff. So that's the kind of thing we get at, because then kids are like, that empathy factor is like, if they can identify with the character in the book, then they understand at a greater depth why, you know, to make a better choice.
Right. Okay. So so there is, you know, you give the, in this one, you're saying, you know, you give them a little something to do to keep themselves from interrupting. Okay.
Then we practice it, you know, and I mean, you know, and the little phrase repeats through. Kids love rhyme, and they love kind of raps, and they, you know, and usually it's the parent or the teacher giving the kid some skills to deal with a certain issue, you know.
Okay.
And sometimes it's not even kids. So
yes,
I have a Making Friends is an Art, and I want that book to apply to everyone. And, you know, the first version of that book that came out, it's about a colored pencil, and he's brown and he doesn't have any friends, and he finds out the reason why is because, you know, he never laughs and he doesn't, you know, do certain things, and each of the colors has a specific like skill or something. You know, black looks out for all of us, and yellow always does what's right, and purple has hopes and dreams, and white won't let us fight, and so I wrote the book wholeheartedly thinking, okay, you mix all the colors together, you get brown, and you know, it's really important to me that the books work for all kids. And the first version of that book said, there was a line in there that says, sometimes I complain a lot because I don't like being brown. And I, you know, as a white woman being ignorant in that situation, it never dawned on me that I would never want a child with brown skin to look at his, you know what I mean? And so that, and until somebody was brave enough to point that out to me, and it just, for, you know, it was kind of racist. I mean, not intentionally, but I just thought, oh my gosh, we've got to, you know, I actually had a social worker call me and she goes, I love your books. I use them all the time, but this one's offensive and I can't even read it to my biracial child. And why would you do that? And I mean, it was never harm intent. It was just, it was ignorance is what it was. So, I rewrote the whole, the book so that it doesn't, you know, so that it works more effectively. I just kind of have this feeling that if it doesn't work for all kids, it doesn't work for any kids. And then I gave her credit in the front. It said, thanks, Terry. And, you know, and I know there's 40,000 of those first ones floating around. So I always have people mail them into me, and then I hand sign and change them. So they're, you know, maybe they'll be worth something later because I fixed it. But I always tell people that that's such a learning experience because everybody makes mistakes and, you know, they're not intentional. But if I were to just say, oh, that's too bad, you don't like the book, then I wouldn't have grown at all from that. But I feel like I just grew so much more appreciation for celebration of differences in color. And, you know, and so I totally rewrote that one and gave her credit. And I tell kids all the time, you know, everybody makes mistakes. It doesn't matter how good or cool you are, everybody's going to make them. And what do you do with that when you make it? Do you own it or do you blame somebody else, you know? And so I love that story because, you know, there you go. And with that book, in order to be a friend, you know, in order to have friends, you have to know how to be a friend. Well, what do you do? So, you know, if you can be like all the colors, black looks out for all of us, yellow always does what's right, purple has hopes and dreams, and white won't let us fight, all those specific, you know, colors and what they do, that's the recipe for being a good friend. And if you can do all that, you'll have so many friends, you won't know what to do with them all, you know? Because if a kid's dealing with this issue, even just having one friend in their corner can make the world a difference. But when a kid feels like they're all alone, that's really tough. So that's turned into my absolute favorite, most favorite book. And because it works for, actually, they're even reading it in senior centers when grandma and grandpa move into the senior center and they don't play nice. Sometimes the OTs will pull out that book and read to them, and it just kind of gives them a wake-up call of, oh, yeah, that's how people need to treat each other.
Oh, wow. That's really
kind of funny. Yeah. So.
Yeah, so now's a good time just to mention that the five books that I've chosen for Juliet to talk about today, I picked because I felt that they were some of the challenges that kids who think differently might have. I know that, you know, we can only talk about so many, so but that's why I picked the five. So my mouth is a volcano. You know, sometimes, we're, you know, there's the challenge of, you know, the interrupting the and the enthusiasm for what we, you know, think and want to share with people. And then making friends is an art, just like you said.
Right.
And even having one friend to start. Or and you know what? I think some kids are happy with one friend. They don't need
right.
a
and
lot.
Right. And it doesn't, you know, some people are a lot of friend people and some people are just one or two friends. And, you know, you have different levels of friendship that you have.
Exactly.
But, and in the back, there's a page of, on that book that talks to parents about how to, you know, watch your child objectively and try to help them build friendships. You know, you can't build them for them, but you can give them the tools to build them too. So,
okay, so that makes sense. And it's important to know because I think sometimes we as parents have an idea of what, you know, friendship would look like for our kids. And
well, and one of the mistakes some parents make is that they think that a lot of friends is always best, and maybe they had a feel for a lot of friends and felt like they had to have a lot of friends, but some kids don't really need that. So
right.
you kind of have to look at your child and see, you know, I want my child to be happy and well-adjusted and get along with other people, respect other people, celebrate differences, but, you know, just because I was the person that wanted to have a lot of friends, that might not be my child's favorite thing. But they have to be friend capable. You know what I mean?
Yes,
that's what you're going for.
Absolutely. Perfect. That's a great term, friend capable. And also, I think it's friendship is a little bit. Well, I don't even know. It's a little bit. I think friendship can be pretty confusing, especially at young ages when you come into like a classroom of like, you know, 20 or 25 kids, and I notice like sometimes teachers say, you know, this are friends, like, and I really had to work with my son around this, but not everybody had to be his friend, you know, that we distinguished out who, you know, exactly, you're going to be polite to you're going to be polite to everyone, you're going to be kind to, you know, as best that you can,
right.
And there are going to be kids that you connect with and you want to really spend time with. I found it very confusing for him.
Well, you can always say there's friends. We want everyone to be friends. We want them to be friendly. We want them to be friends. But then there's our closer friends and our closest friends and our close friends. And you can kind of, you know, quantify it like that too.
Absolutely. Perfect. Okay. So the next book that I chose, which I think people can relate to, is It's Hard to Be a Verb.
Okay, I'm a verb. I had ADHD as a child. I'm 52, feel almost, and so they called it BRAT when I was a kid, brat.
They
didn't really have a term for it, you know. And I was told a lot about what I can't do and told about what I shouldn't do. And, you know, and I felt like I was kind of always in trouble. I seriously thought my name was No Julie growing up, you know.
Mm.
And so I want kids to understand that, you know, when you have an ADHD child, it's like learning Spanish at a football game. It's like a full-on 24-hour ping-pong tournament in your head. You have so many capabilities, but it's a gift, okay? I look at it not as a disability ADHD. I look at it as being differently abled. Because these kiddos, you know, and the more ADHD a child is, the closer in proximity the structure around them has to become. So the little kid, you know, he has no focus at school, and so his mom gives him a focus squishy that he can concentrate on, and you know, sometimes those aren't a great idea because they go flying across the room. There's a product out there called Bouncy Bands. If you go to bouncybands.com, it's like PCV pipe that goes on the legs of the chair or the legs of the desk, and then a little rubber band thing that goes across it, and the kid can tap their foot and bounce their foot, and there's motion going on, so their hands can be still, but their body is moving. And then a list, and, you know, because having an ADHD child myself, you know, he got it from me, of course. I would say, Carson, go put your shoes on. Oh, go comb your hair. And he would get one shoe on and watch TV, you know. So I found the best thing for him was to give him a nag board. And I wrote nag board at the top. And I would make a list of all the things he had to do. And then he chuck him off in the morning. So then all I had to do is say, hey, check your board. You know, and so the more you can teach them structures, and they like visual lists, and they like concrete, you know, hands-on stuff, and you have to kind of teach them what's in it for them. You know, like if the teacher has her schedule up on the board, that's not that verb's schedule. That verb needs his own schedule right on the corner of his desk that says the exact same thing, but it's in closer proximity. And sometimes, you know, teachers have these kids that just put everything everywhere and they're scattered all over. And so I have them go and take a big old piece of paper off the roll and have the kid decorate it and then laminate it. And that's their mat. And then their desk, their chair, and all their stuff has to go in that mat space, you know, because it gives them a visual proximity as to, you know, my stuff and where it needs to be.
Wow, that's a great idea. Because it grounds them in a physical location. Okay, the next book I thought we could talk about is I Can't Believe You Said That.
Okay. In your head, people have what's called a social filter. and it keeps you from saying things that are disrespectful to others. And when words in your head, there's, you know, I have to actually, grown-ups struggle with the social filter oftentimes, you know, and boy, look at our politicians. They struggle with the social filter, and they just say things without thinking about them, you know. And so that's a real hard thing to for a kid to conceptualize. So in that book, RJ, his dad tells his grandma her skin looks like a Dalmatian, and he tells this lady at the store she smells bad because she's holding cheese and it kind of smells bad. And then he asks his friend's mom, when's that baby in your tummy going to be due? And she says, I don't have a baby in my tummy. He says, well, why are you getting so fat? And, you know, and then, you know, and so he talks inappropriately and he says the wrong things. And his dad says, you know, in your head you have two bubbles full of words. There's your thinking bubble and your talking bubble. And your thinking bubble has words in it that are only for you. And your talking bubble has words in it that everyone can hear. In between those bubbles is the social filter. And it keeps some of the words from your thinking bubble going in for your talking bubble. And so then he practices using his social filter. And it gives him a concrete visual of what that is, you know, and why not to say those things. And kids get it. I mean, that makes sense. A lot of times that kids think differently, they struggle with that, especially, you know, our little kiddos that are on the spectrum and kids that, you know, just are differently wired, and they react as opposed to act, and it's really hard to get them to think about stuff sometimes.
Sure.
So. But that visual of that just really seems to, oh, I get it now, you know, so it's kind
of
fun.
And I think that it is fun, and it is, as you said, some of these concepts that we're trying to explain to our kids are pretty, I guess, is abstract the right word? Like
they're not, they can't relate, they're literal thinkers, depending on their ages, but a lot of people, you know, are literal thinkers, and they just... And then also they have this, well, that doesn't really apply to me, so why should I pay attention to that, you know? So, and then, you know, with all the video gaming and stuff that's going on with kids, they get the answer really quick, and it's a push away, a button away, and that's a totally different show if you want to talk about that one. But so they when stuff is hard to figure out and they can't get the instant answer, they tend to shut down. They just quit or move on or hit, you know, repeat or whatever. And life isn't like that. You know, you got to have grit.
Right.
You have to dig deep. And so, you know, but that's kind of an off-topic thing we can get back to later if you want.
Yeah, sure. No, but I think it's a valid point. And sometimes we wonder, or we maybe assume we know why kids, you know, don't do what we ask them to do, or learn what we want them to learn in any given social situation, or basically they just keep doing what we don't want them to do.
Right.
And so translating that into something that is really concrete, visual, like you say, can make a difference. And I think that's what this book, you know, illustrates.
Well, and if they love the character in the book and they identify with that character, they're going to want to do and say what the character does and says in the book too, you know?
Right.
I mean, they, and then the next, you know, they love that. I mean, they kind of identify with that.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay. And the last book I chose was I Can't Find My Whatchamacallit.
Okay. That's executive function skills. We have grown-ups and kids who really struggle with executive function skills. And, you know, those are such as, well, the social filter is definitely executive function skill as well, but organization, time management, setting priorities, making plans, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one has Cletus and Bocephus, and they're cousins. And Cletus is a real right-brained, super unorganized, creative. And Bocephus is a real left brain, planned out, not so creative, not so flexible person.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them together, they're like the perfect person, or a Bocletus, which is all what we strive for.
But
they each push each other to become better at what they do. And so in this one, Cletus can't He has to clean his room and he can't figure out, you know, how to do it. And, you know, you're so disorganized. That's what they say to me. Why can't you be like Bocephus? That's how you should be. And so he ends up putting, Bocephus comes over to help him clean his room. And he says, you know, there's a home for everything. Every whatchamacallit has its own spot. When you take something out, just put it back. I'm organized, Cletus, and you're not. And so he says, but I like my messy room. And he says, well, being organized doesn't mean you have to be a neat freak. It just means you have to be able to find what you're looking for within a reasonable amount of time. You know, because it's not like everybody should be a neat freak. That doesn't work for people. But when they can't find stuff, it's ineffective.
Yeah, that's where the frustration comes
from. Right. So the main concept of that book is you have to put your, you know, he says, let's sort all your stuff into three piles. Keep me, toss me, and donate me. And the first question out of Cletus's brain is, well, what do I know what to keep and what to toss? And he says, well, ask yourself these questions. Have you used this during the last year? If you get rid of it, can you replace it if you need to? Does anybody else need it? It goes through these questions that are real concrete, you know, to help people organize. So I start reading that, and teachers will hear it, and then they'll get out a piece of paper and write them down because they're like, oh, I have to clean my kitchen, and I know, you know. So they're kind of helpful for anybody, really. So.
Of course. That's very cool. I like that. We have a little bit of time, so I want to ask you if you can pick one of your books that you would like to tell people about.
There's a new one out. Yeah, well, there's a new one coming that I can't. I'm not going to talk too much about, but it's about celebrating differences. But the one that is a real hot topic right now is called "But It's Not My Fault." And it's on accepting responsibility for your actions.
Okay.
And, you know, everybody makes mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But if you blame somebody else for your mistake, you give away your chance to learn something. Because a mistake is a chance to learn. So the next time you make a mistake, just own it and say, yep, I did that. Now what can I do to improve my situation? You know, don't be a blamer. And it's about, you know, accepting responsibility for your actions. You are responsible for the things that you do, for your choices at home and your choices at school. Blaming others is a reason, but it's not an excuse. You keep blaming others, you surely will lose. You're in charge of letting me know when you have homework. You are in charge of returning your library books. And you are in charge of your legs, your arms, your hands, your voice, and your tongue. You know, so today you made a few mistakes and it caused your day to be rough. But don't blame others for your poor choices. That'll make your life tough. Instead, focus on what needs to be done whenever you make a mistake. Own up and become responsible for the choices that you've made, you know. And so we talk to kids all the time about don't be a blamer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's great.
That's kind of
And
that's kind of a good grown-up lesson, too. Some of them are, you know, some of them.
Yeah, of course. And so I was going to ask you, what age group do you usually write for?
You know, primarily I write for K through 6th grade, but, and there's some that go down to pre-K, of course, you know, then there's some that go to high school, and there's some that go to seniors. I mean, there's just a lot
of
metaphor books, you know, and so, you know, I have one on disasters and violence and how to talk to kids about that, and, you know, kids in high school, there's one on eating disorder prevention, and it's metaphor, and it's called How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Feathers, and there's one on horse therapy, and that's definitely a high schooler's book, but it's a 32-page kid book, you know. So sometimes teachers will even use, like, I have Soda Pop Head on Anger, and they'll say, hey, you know, I have this 9-year-old I'm working with, and he's really struggling with anger, and I know you struggle with anger. Can I read this book to you and try it out, and then you tell me if you think it'd be good for him? You know, so counselors creatively can use these books to give kids strategies, you know.
Wow,
and
cool.
Oftentimes it's a lot more fun to be read to. Everybody likes to be read to. So,
yes.
You know.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, when I start reading to grown-ups, I'll start reading to grown-ups and kids, and the teachers, I'll lose the teachers. I mean, they'll just go, you know, their eyes will just open, and the same 6-year-old that was there many years ago comes out, and they lose all track of time, and it's fun. So,
oh, my gosh.
You know.
Well, as I said before, I think you have a very cool job, a very cool opportunity to connect with kids in a really, really positive way that
still is informative and instructive and helpful.
Well,
and
thank
so,
you.
Yeah,
I
really
never thought it would evolve
it.
Into this. It's just it's
no,
so much fun, and the books are all research based. So I take the people
right.
who really know what they're doing, and then I kind of rewrite it in kid words using their stuff. So, you know, it's so important. Knowledge is key, and these little critters, they don't come with instructions, you know. And kids are getting kind of weirder every year. We have to get weird with them, you know, because they're awesome. But you know, we just have to. And it's so you're going to read to your child. You know, you're going to read to a child. Spend 10 minutes reading a book to them that's going to give them a skill that they can solve a problem in the future. That's the goal.
Okay.
So,
I was trying, I made a few notes, and really what I think my favorite of all was, you know, the thinking bubble, you know, the bubbles in your head, and then the filter in between, because I feel like that is a... It just turns something that is, you know, a challenge, but it makes it so concrete and understandable that I feel like if we can do that for our kids more and more, they can go, oh, like you said, oh, I get it now.
Yeah.
That's what they want me to do. So... I appreciated everything, and I really love your enthusiasm, and I can tell that you love what you do and that you love the kids that you're writing for. So
thank you.
Yeah.
My goal is to get out there. You know, pretty much all the schools now know of the books, and but, I mean, my ultimate goal before I hang it up is that parents – know that there's resources out there that they can use that are fun and easy and cheap. I mean, books are like $10 a piece, and you know, and there you go, you know. And if they're, you know, so we've written a lot. I mean, it's about eight books a year coming out, you know. But you know, our kids just have these little issues, and as long as they're good quality and colorful and fun to read, you know, we'll just keep going. Okay, so
perfect.
And
also
the books
the
you can. You can go to juliacookonline.com and you can look
perfect.
At all of them if you want. Yeah.
Thank you. And also, if you'd like to visit, go back to visit Julia's page, of course. But if you go back to the email from today, there's a little link to a resource that Julia has shared with me that you can just click on it and you'll get instant access to. You don't have to opt in or anything like that. Julie, do you want to tell them?
Yeah,
the
it's dealing with your stressed out child. You know, if you have an anxious child, there's certain things as a parent that you can do to help that. And you know, you have to kind of figure out why the anxiety is happening. But you know, the child needs to know that you understand where they're coming from. And there's just some tips on that. And I've written several of those. But if you you know, if you, it's just a little click on, you know, dealing with your child that has a lot of anxiety, because we see that a lot. That's probably the number one mental health issue in our world right now is anxiety, so which then leads to depression. And, you know, if we can give the kids some skills to deal with that when they're little, when they're older, they'll remember those, you know. So, yeah.
So thank you.
And anxiety
for that,
is not a bad thing. I mean, people always say, oh, good anxiety, the kids' anxiety. You want some anxiety. You just don't want it to control your life. I mean, having a little anxiety is very healthy. It keeps you on your toes, and it keeps you aware of certain situations. And, you know, that's a good thing. It's when your anxiety overfloods your common sense and, you know, obsessive, you know, thoughts come into play. That it keeps you from doing the things you're supposed to do. Then it becomes a problem. So
yes. Okay. So that's there for you. As I said, just click on the link and you will get to download it right there. So, Julia and baby.
I know. I have my little granddaughter here, so she's making these baby noises.
Yeah, and, it's lovely. Lovely to hear. Thank you again for coming on and joining me and sharing some of your work with us today. It's very entertaining and informative, so I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I feel like an honored guest. I'm glad to be a part of it.
Good.
I have a Facebook page. When the new books come out, if you like my Facebook page, then you can get A notice that, hey, this book is now available. There's like 4 or 5 new ones coming out. So.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. Is it Julia Cook on Facebook?
Julia Cook Online. It's just, or Julia Cook Author. You can get on either way. The next one will be, That Rule Doesn't Apply to Me. That's the total of it. So, title. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All perfect. All right, so for our listeners, lots of things for you to think about there. Be sure to check your email in the morning tomorrow, and you will see who our next guest is. And I'll talk to you then.